Well, we've worked our way through the first seven chapters of 2 Corinthians in our study of this book. That means we're just a little bit beyond halfway through. And if you don't remember, or you haven't heard about the structure of the book, the first seven chapters are all about Paul's ministry there to the people at Corinth. He's kind of defending himself. He's trying to explain what he's been doing and why he's been doing it. Then we have two chapters sort of in the middle, chapters 8 and 9, and they really regard an offering that Paul is trying to collect for the needy saints in Jerusalem. So get ready for the next two chapters to be talking about money. I know that many of us don't really appreciate hearing a lot about money and offerings and generosity and things like that at church, but this is what chapters 8 and 9 are all about. And then the last four chapters of the book are really, again, Paul's ministry, and really he's defending his ministry, he's justifying it, and he's kind of attacking those who are his opponents there at the church. So we'll continue pressing on through the book of 2 Corinthians. I expect once we get to June, we'll have our regular summer sermon series that we usually do, June, July, and August. And I've been thinking about something to do for those months, but we'll continue to press on here for the next few months until we get to the summertime, which hopefully is not too far around the corner, as we see all the snow out there, but maybe that will be gone in the hopefully near future. What we see here in this passage, starting with chapter 8, verse 1, is what I'm calling a picture of rich generosity. One of the results of God's gracious work in our hearts is that we are generous. In fact, I think a church's generosity is a measure of its spiritual vibrancy. Spiritually vibrant churches are generous churches. Let's take a look at chapter 8, verse 1. He says, "Moreover, brethren, we make known to you the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia, that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded to the riches of their liberality." Okay, he's talking about a group of churches in Macedonia, which is 200 miles or so north of Corinth. And he's using that as an example to spur on or to prod on the generosity of the people there at Corinth. These people at Corinth had agreed to participate in an offering, but they had not really come through with it yet. And so Paul begins this passage looking at these people of Macedonia who had been very generous. In fact, even in spite of their poverty, they had been very generous. And so he uses this language in verse 2. Their deep poverty abounded in their riches of their liberality. Liberality here simply means sincere generosity. So they were richly generous in spite of the fact that they were stricken with poverty. Well, what does rich generosity look like? What would it mean if we, like these Macedonian church members, were abounding in liberality or abounding in generosity? What does rich generosity look like, and how can we be richly generous? I think that's the theme of our passage before us today. First of all, rich generosity is a result of the grace of God. He mentions that in verse 1. We make known unto you the grace of God bestowed upon the churches of Macedonia. He begins by citing the generosity of these people in Macedonia, probably referring to the churches at Philippi, Thessalonica, and Berea. Again, this is 200 miles or so north in Greece of the Corinthian city, the city of Corinth. And these people had been very generous in contributing to this offering that Paul is trying to collect for the poor saints there in Jerusalem. Their generosity was an expression of the grace of God. Now, if you were to go through chapters 8 and 9, you would count about 10 times that Paul uses this word grace, and he uses it in several different ways. In fact, I'm told, one of the commentators said that he uses the word grace about 6 different ways in these two chapters. And he starts in chapter 8, verse 1 with grace, and he ends at the end of chapter 9 with grace. So these two chapters are full of the grace of giving. And that's what he's talking about here, that if you know, if you understand, if you've experienced the grace of God yourself, you will want to be gracious toward others. And that idea of grace is simply a kind gift, an unmerited gift that you want to give to others because God has given that to you. And so because of this grace that has happened to these churches at Macedonia, they've experienced the grace of God. Now they want to be generous themselves. Grace, of course, is a free gift. That's the basic meaning of the term. Something that is freely given, something that we didn't earn, something that we don't merit. It is purely God's kindness and His goodness toward us. These people of Macedonia had experienced God's free grace, and now they wanted to give a gift to others. They wanted to participate in this offering. Well, likewise, if we have experienced God's free gift of grace, that should make us gracious. That should make us richly generous. Matthew 10, verse 8 says, "Freely you have received, freely give." That's the response, or that's the outcome of God's grace in our hearts, is that we'd be gracious to others. Those lacking generosity either have not experienced the grace of God, or they don't appreciate the grace of God. If God's grace is operating in your life, it will result in rich generosity. Secondly, rich generosity is possible in spite of great trials and afflictions. So let's go on to verse 2, that in great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded in the riches of their liberality. The churches there at Macedonia had experienced this great trial of affliction. This word trial is a testing. These afflictions amounted to a testing of faith, which probably means that they were persecuted because of their faith. The Christians of Macedonia were in poverty, deep poverty, because of the difficulties, the afflictions, the persecutions that were affecting them there in their homeland. I read somewhere, historically, this region had been ravaged by many wars and even then was being plundered by the Roman authority. Wars, barbarian invasions, Roman settlements, and the restructuring of the province had contributed to a dismal financial status. Well, if things don't change in our country, some of us might be facing a dismal financial status as well. Fortunately, we have not experienced the kind of persecution that went along with this dire financial status like these people had experienced. In fact, he talks about their poverty and uses the word their deep poverty. Scholars have translated these words as the very depth of destitution. Poverty at its deepest, rock bottom poverty, extreme or profound poverty. Generally, when you have this kind of poverty, the people who are experiencing that are beggars. These people have virtually no financial resources. So these churches were not affluent or prosperous churches. These people were, by and large, financially destitute. And yet, in spite of this, it says, their liberality or their generosity abounded. They were joyful, in fact, in their liberality. This word liberality here refers to open-hearted generosity. And they were rich in this generosity, lavish or liberal in the good sense of liberal, being generous, being open-handed, being lavish in one's ability to give. So their adversity did not prevent them from being generous. They were deeply in poverty, but also rich in their generosity. Generosity does not really depend on how much money we have. Somebody might think to themselves, well, I could afford to be generous if I were rich. But the fact is, I'm not rich, so I can't afford to be generous. Generosity is a spirit that really has nothing, or at least very little, to do with how much money you have in the bank account. I've known, in fact, people who have been very generous who have had not much. In fact, my experience has been that the people who seem to have the least tend to be the most generous. I don't know if you've experienced that, but oftentimes those who have the most are the least generous. In fact, charitable giving rates, the statistics show that charitable giving rates among the wealthy are often lower than the giving rates among the middle class or the poor. A recent report found that people who make between $50,000 and $75,000 a year give an average of 7.6% of their discretionary income to charity, compared to, on an average, 4.2% of those making $100,000 or more. So oddly enough, the more that people make, the less generous they are. Now that's on average, and obviously we know that there are some people who are mega wealthy who are billionaires, and many of these billionaires give away a lot of their money. In fact, they might give away a large portion of their money. Some billionaires make it a point, perhaps by the end of their life, to give away almost all the money that they have, and we know that that's true in many cases. But for just average people, or on the average statistically, the more you make, the less you give. which is kind of an odd thing. You would think that the people who have the most would probably give the most. And statistically speaking, obviously, if you are, let's say, tithing off of a $1 million income, that amount that you give is going to be more than somebody who's tithing off a $50,000 income, obviously. But as a percentage of your giving, oftentimes those who have less give a higher percentage. Those who have more give a lower percentage. Well, the people of Macedonia had little, but they gave much. In fact, it says they abounded in their generosity. To abound here means to overflow, to have a surplus. Now, these people didn't have a surplus, but they gave a surplus, which is kind of an amazing thing. Their exuberant joy and extreme poverty combined to overflow in lavish generosity. So even though they were poverty-stricken, they were still lavish in their generosity. Probably not so much that they gave a huge amount, but the proportion of their giving was very high. Out of the little bit that they had, they gave a lot. Does that remind you of a little story in the New Testament about a widow and her mite? Remember, she only had just a little bit, but when Jesus called attention to this lady, it said that she gave her all her living she threw into the bucket or into the money pot, whatever it was. Well, the rich were casting in lots of money, but they had lots of money. This is a lady who had very little, and she put in, as Jesus said, her whole living. So as a proportion of giving, oftentimes those who have the least give the most. And I don't know if it's happened to you, but on occasion, people have stopped by and they press a $20 bill in my hand or give me a $100 check or something like that. And they say, hey, do you know anybody who really needs some money? And I sometimes think to myself, yeah, you need some money. Why are you giving me money to give to somebody else? And yet they say, here, I have a little extra this month. Can you maybe make sure that this gets into the hands of somebody who needs it? And I think, my goodness, here's a person who's on a fixed income, or a person who's not very wealthy, a person who obviously doesn't have the means to do it, and yet they're giving me money to give to somebody in need. Wow, that's amazing. It's not the wealthy people who do that. It's the people who are of minimal means who often do that. Well, that's because the spirit of generosity has nothing to do with how much money you have. It has to do with the grace of God, if it's operating in your life or not. You could be in severe poverty and still be generous and give away a dollar. Your dollar's donation could be more generous than a millionaire who gives away $100,000. It's really a proportion of your giving. How can we be joyful and generous in adversity? Verse 1, we make known unto you the grace of God bestowed upon these people. And so if God is operating in our lives, if God's grace is operating, we will be richly generous. Difficult circumstances like this, these adversities, are not an excuse for lack of generosity. When we are giving by grace, we don't allow afflictions to hinder our generosity. That generosity is there whether we are in afflictions or not, whether we're prospering or in poverty. We still want to be generous because the grace of God is working in our hearts. Well, most of us this morning are not experiencing the kind of trials that these people were. So if they could be generous, and this is kind of Paul's point that he's bringing up to the Corinthians, he's talking about the gracious, rich generosity of the Macedonians. If they, in their poverty, can be richly generous, well, we could maybe be richly generous as well. We are not experiencing dire poverty. We are not experiencing persecution or adversity like this. And so we could be generous as well. Thirdly, rich generosity is voluntary. Notice going on in verse 3, for I bear witness that according to their ability, yes, beyond their ability, they were freely willing. These people wanted to give generously. In fact, the Corinthian church needed to be reminded. They needed a little bit of prompting that they had agreed to participate in this offering. The Macedonians didn't need any prompting. They were freely willing to give. In fact, he says, according to their ability, first of all, they started giving, you might say, according to their ability. And their ability was pretty low. I think Paul's expectation for them was probably that they wouldn't even contribute to this offering because they are in deep poverty. How can people in deep poverty contribute to an offering? Well, they did some, and then he goes on to say, not only was their giving according to their ability, yes, and beyond their ability, they were freely willing. The sense of this is that they gave to their limits and even beyond their limits. Somehow these people gave beyond what they could give, or I think the sense is what they could afford to give. Sometimes probably all of us spend a little bit more than what we can afford. Well, these people gave more than what they could afford. They gave beyond their limits. Their generosity surpassed all of Paul's expectations. Some people give beyond what is reasonable to give, beyond what we would normally expect. I remember years ago when I was in boot camp in the military, they would take us to chapel on Sundays. And a lot of people, they didn't go to chapel because they wanted to worship God. They just got out of the dorm or out of the, you know, barracks for a while to go to chapel. And I remember a guy gave $20. You know, I was near him, and he put a $20 bill in the offering plate. And I remember seeing the shocked look on the faces of these people sitting around. You put $20 into the offering plate? Now, this is a bunch of the lowest level of soldiers who just got into the military. I think the pay back then was like $400 a month. And for somebody, and this we're talking back in the early 1980s, and so $20 could buy a lot more than it does today. So somebody putting $20 into the offering plate was astounding to these other young GIs, thinking that is remarkable. I could see putting a dollar in, maybe $5, but $20? You know what you can buy with $20? It was astounding that someone would do that. And there are still people, I think, today who think that, boy, putting $20 in the offering plate is a huge offering. It's really not, but that's how some people think about it. Is that unreasonable to put that much money in the offering plate? Obviously, we need to be reasonable or rational about our giving, but there may be occasions when we give above and beyond the limits that we normally would follow. In certain circumstances, we might give beyond what would be reasonable to give. Do you know what most people think of as reasonable amount to give? I'm told that on average, among typical evangelicals, the percentage of giving is about 4%. That's an average evangelical amount, 4%. I'm told that only about 5% of churchgoers tithe. Now we're talking all churchgoers. Out of 100 people who go to church, 5 of them are tithing on their income. The average churchgoer contributes about $17 a week. $17 a week is the average giving. If all those people gave 10%, churches would have an extra $139 billion a year. What could churches do with $139 billion if everybody decided to tithe? Well, that's because what people think of as reasonable, oh, I'll chuck in 20 bucks a week. That's pretty reasonable. I'm making $100,000, but, you know, 20 bucks a week is pretty reasonable. I hope that's not your idea of reasonable giving. We ought to give a percentage, and the Bible doesn't specify exactly how much to give, but the Bible, as we'll find out here in chapters 8 and 9, the Bible does talk a lot about how we ought to give and what kind of giving, what sincere and sacrificial giving should look like. Well, maybe we don't always give beyond what we normally would be able to give, but on rare occasions, we ought to be willing, because of God's grace working within us, we ought to be willing to maybe go beyond what we normally would give. Maybe we think in our mind, okay, this is, you know, what I make weekly, or this is what I make monthly, and this is my typical giving. But if a need came about, if there was a special offering, a special project, something like that, maybe I'd be willing to give more. In fact, maybe I'd be willing to give sacrificially. That's essentially what sacrificial giving is, beyond our normal limit. I won't be able to get my lattes, or I won't be able to get my whatever, the things that I like having. I won't be able to get my little special luxuries because I'm giving that to the Lord this week or this month. I should read you what service, I think maybe last Christmas or something, we read, I think Mike read the story about this family who lived on potatoes and stuff like that for months at a time so they'd have a little extra to give in the Christmas offering. Well, you know, people ought to be, godly, genuine Christians ought to be willing to give up their little luxuries from time to time so that they can contribute to something bigger, something important, which would be some way of serving the Lord through our giving. Well, their giving was voluntary, as I said here at the end of verse 3. They were freely willing. This word means of their own choice, of their own initiative, voluntarily. This was not the result of high pressure tactics. No one was forcing them into this. Of course, the Corinthians had originally agreed voluntarily to contribute to this offering. They just sort of put it on the back burner. And so Paul is bringing this up now to remind them that they need to get busy with collecting this offering. Well, we believe also in free will giving. We believe that it's not a matter of being coerced into it, not being pressured into it, that we ought to give graciously because of God's grace in our hearts. We'll find out when we get to chapter 9. God loves a what kind of? Cheerful giver, right? The Bible talks about giving regularly and proportionally and sacrificially and cheerfully. And so we'll find out a lot more about it as we go through these two chapters. One of the constant criticisms of church by outsiders is that they're continually asking for money. I don't know if you've heard that before, but a lot of people who criticize the church often talk about how they're always asking for money. And we know that some churches do that. Many churches, if you go to their church almost every week or from time to time, very, very commonly, very frequently, they're begging for money. They prod and they coerce people into giving. But if God's grace is operating in the church, coercive appeals should really not be necessary. If the people want to give, it's probably due to God's grace. If God's grace, if they freely received from the Lord and now they want to freely give. If we appreciate God's grace toward us, then rich generosity is not a problem. And I would have to say in my experience here, I'm thankful that I've not really had to try to prod or coerce people into giving. As you probably know, we've done well financially because of the giving, because of the sacrificial and generous giving of the people of our church. And we've had to talk about how are we going to use these excess funds for various projects instead of having to carp and complain that we don't have enough money. So it's been a blessing that people are generous and that people give. I'm very thankful for that. Well, the Bible teaches the grace of giving. That means we give willingly and freely and not under compulsion. We give because we appreciate God's grace in our lives. And on special occasions, perhaps we, like the Macedonians, give beyond what we normally could. We give beyond the limit. We participate and even give sacrificially because we want to participate. We want to do something for the Lord. That's what the Macedonians did. Rich generosity is a ministry to the saints, going on here in verse 4, imploring us with much urgency that we should receive the gift and the fellowship of the ministry of the saints. Now, again, they had to implore Paul because I think Paul was reluctant to accept this offering because these people are in dire poverty. They're in deep poverty. They are really financially distressed. They're almost like beggars. They have almost no financial resources, and yet they basically had to beg him to participate in this offering. They saw this as a privilege to participate in this offering. They wanted to because of God's grace within them. They demanded the right to participate. They begged to contribute to this offering. They didn't want to be left out. When was the last time you heard of anybody begging to be part of an offering? Normally, people beg off, as it were. They say, oh, sorry, I can't contribute because of this, that, or the other. I can't participate in this offering because, you know, whatever problems I have. Typically, people are not begging to get in on an offering. But these people urgently beg to be included. That, I think, again, is evidence of abundant grace. God is working in their hearts. They have a great appreciation for the fact that they've been saved through grace. And now there are poor saints over in Jerusalem, these people they've never even met before, and yet they want to contribute to their aid. Paul describes this offering as the fellowship of the ministering to the saints. Two important words there, fellowship and ministering. Whenever we contribute in an offering like this, we are involved in the fellowship of this project. Fellowship means partnership. So we are in partnership with those who are giving toward this project, whatever it might be. So it's a collective effort. And when we contribute to an offering, we are partnering together with everybody else who is doing the same thing and trying to support a project or a work of the Lord. Somebody said that sharing material and spiritual blessings is a mark of the true church and a vivid demonstration of living Christianity. We ought to be sharing together. We ought to be cooperating in fellowship and partnership with others of like mind and faith who are trying to do the same thing. You know, many projects are possible only when God's people share their resources, when we pool our resources. Most of us are aware that we're part of the Wisconsin Fellowship of Baptist Churches. Most of these churches, there's about 100 of them in Wisconsin. Most of them are about our size, maybe a little bit bigger, maybe some of them are quite a bit smaller than ours. There are a few, maybe just a handful of churches that have more than probably 100 members. Most of these churches are quite small. And yet we pool our resources and we can do things like church planting or church reinvigorating. We've got one church plant going right now and one church kind of a redo, you might say, a reinstitution of a church, something like that. So there are two church works going on, and the only way that the WFBC is able to do that is because most of the churches in the organization contribute something toward this process or toward the goals of church planting. There are, I don't know how many churches in Wisconsin that have been planted through the work of the WFBC. Some of us know the church up in Rhinelander. Mark Ring is the pastor up there at Faith Baptist Church. That church was planted through the WFBC. I would guess there's at least maybe 25 or 30 churches here in the state that have been planted by the WFBC in the last, whatever, 40 years or so. So, you know, how can we do that? How can we participate? I mean, we could never, as a small church, actually plant another church. This is a hugely expensive thing. But we could cooperate with a lot of other churches and pool our little bit of resources, and all of a sudden we have a little bit bigger resource because we're pooling it together, we're cooperating, and we're doing the ministry. Ministry is simply service. So when we're engaged with this, we're in fellowship. We're pooling our resources. We're going together with others, and then we are doing this for the ministry of the saints. Ministry is simply service. We're serving God by serving others in their time of need. And it's a great privilege. We ought to be engaged in serving one another, serving the Lord by serving his people. A practical way to help needy people, needy fellow believers, is, at least sometimes, to give them some money. People need money sometimes, especially this offering is for the poor saints in Jerusalem. They needed a little bit of financial aid. And so we as a church from time to time help people with financial needs. But as a collective group of people, we, along with many others, can help in large ways. And so that's a fellowship of the ministry. All of us ought to be engaged or involved in the ministry to the saints. And when we contribute to the offering, that's what we're doing. Some of the money stays here in this church. Much of it also goes to missionaries and other needs as well. So we are engaged in the ministry of the saints. Rich generosity in verse 5 is self-giving. Self-giving, verse 5, not only as we had hoped, but they gave themselves to the Lord. And it's beyond what we had hoped, he says. Not only as we had hoped. In other words, this is beyond Paul's expectation. Paul had probably hoped that they would contribute a little bit, but they ended up contributing a lot. And the first thing that they did was give themselves to the Lord. They wanted to give their money, but more importantly, they wanted to give themselves. You might say both their persons and their possessions belonged to God. And this idea, this concept, this attitude of self-giving is the primary basis, I think, of generosity. Why are we generous? Because we are giving ourselves ultimately to the Lord. We are submitting ourselves to God. We're putting God first. Jesus said, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all these things will be added unto you." So that's what we do. We give ourselves to the Lord. Of course, in a certain sense, we give ourselves to the Lord when we are saved. We are committing ourselves to Christ and his work when we are saved. But then really, the Christian life in general is a continual giving of ourselves to the Lord. And as we give ourselves to the Lord, we're obviously giving everything we have to the Lord. What's in our purse, what's in our wallets, belongs to God, because we recognize that he's the owner of all things. We're just a steward. Everything that we have belongs to God. We give ourselves and everything connected to us to the Lord, and that makes generosity just a normal response. The most important thing that we do is give ourselves to God. And then he goes on to say they gave then to us. They gave themselves to us by the will of God. So the Macedonians gave themselves or committed themselves to Paul and his companions, his colleagues there. They entrusted themselves to them. They believed that they were godly representatives sent from Christ to proclaim the gospel, and they put their faith, their trust in these apostles as well. And so they gave them their money to help these poor saints at Jerusalem. Somebody said, if we give ourselves to God, we will have little problem giving our substance to God. That's a good thing to think about. If we give ourselves, we're not going to have a problem with our substance. If we give our person, we're not going to have a problem giving our possessions. Because what? Who owns our possessions? God does. He's the owner of everything. So once we give ourselves to God, well, then it's not a big deal to give of our things, because really we don't own those things. Rich generosity comes from dedication to the Lord and dedication to those who serve the Lord. Number 6, rich generosity is an expression of God's grace in us. Again, we come back to grace in verse 6. So we urge Titus that as he had begun, so he would also complete this grace in you as well. So Titus, remember, is the representative that Paul has sent to the people at Corinth, and he's supposed to go there now and collect this offering. He's supposed to complete this obligation that they had put themselves under some time ago. They had volunteered to contribute to this offering, but they hadn't done anything about it. So Paul urges Titus now, he's telling the people at Corinth, that Titus is going to show up, and when he does show up, he's going to fulfill this obligation that they put themselves under to contribute to this offering. It's one thing to say that you'll contribute to an offering. It's another thing to open your wallet, to get out the cash, to write the check, to send the funds. It's easy to say, oh, I'll do that, and then not do it. Well, these people had essentially done that. Yes, we'll be involved in this contribution to this offering, but then they just never got around to it. So Titus is going to show up and encourage them to go ahead and write the check. And finally, verse 7, rich generosity comes from abundant grace. Verse 7, but as you abound in everything, in faith and speech and knowledge and all diligence and in your love for us, see that you abound in this grace also. So the Corinthian church was well known for having spiritual virtues and spiritual gifts. He mentions here that they abound in various areas, but unfortunately they lacked the abundance of gracious giving. They abounded in these spiritual gifts, but not in the grace of giving. And they abounded in other ways as well. History tells us that the city of Corinth was a prosperous port. This is a trading center. And the people of Corinth were doing far better financially than the people of Macedonia. So this was a prosperous church where the city of Macedonia, the people of Macedonia, they were in dire poverty. The people of Corinth were not. They were far more prosperous. So Paul urges them to abound in this grace as well, this gracious act. This offering is what he's talking about. This kindness shown in the contribution of this offering, he tells them to be abundant in that as well. I suppose some people think that because they have other spiritual virtues, they don't need to be financially generous. In other words, somebody might say, well, I have faith and speech and knowledge and diligence and love. I really don't need to be generous on top of all that. I have these other things going for me, so I don't need to be generous. Let somebody else be generous. Somebody else has the gift of generosity. I don't. Well, no, that doesn't really fly. That's not a good excuse. We should have the grace of generosity as well. They had these other virtues, these other things going for them, and Paul says, see to it that you do this as well. In fact, Paul now exhorts them to follow through. He's expecting them to abound in this giving. One last time, Paul refers to the participation here as this grace, this gracious act. Grace received prompts grace given. So if you've received the grace of God, make sure that you extend the grace of God in the sense of giving a gift. And note that this is a command. See that you abound in this grace also. They had neglected this responsibility, and now they needed to fulfill their obligation. All of us ought to be abounding in the grace of giving. One of the results of experiencing God's grace in our lives is the desire to then extend grace toward others. If God's grace has been abundant in our lives, we ought to be willing to share abundantly with others. If God has gifted us in various ways, well, then we should be generous with that gifting. I'm thankful that many in our church are generous givers. Many give generously, sacrificially, regularly, and cheerfully. And all of us, the church, this church, other churches, other organizations, other agencies that we support, all these things are benefited from the generous giving of the people of our church. If you have received grace, well, then we ought to be gracious in our generosity. Perhaps Paul would say the same thing to some of us this morning. See that you abound in this grace also. Perhaps some of us, like the Corinthians, would say, well, I abound in this and I abound in that and I'm doing this and that and the other thing, but I'm really not abounding in gracious generosity, rich generosity. Well, I think Paul might have to say to some of us, see that you abound in this grace also. Perhaps some here see the need to be encouraged toward gracious generosity. We see the generosity of the Macedonian believers who, out of their deep poverty, gave generously. And maybe some of us are involved or have the trials, the adversities that bring us into deep poverty as well. But still, we ought to seek to be generous. Perhaps the example of the Macedonian believers and their amazing generosity, in spite of their poverty and persecution, can spur us on to more generous and gracious giving. Paul says nothing here about the amount given. He doesn't specify a certain amount that we ought to give. He's not really concerned about the size of the gift. He's concerned about the attitude of giving. Those who have experienced the grace of God are joyfully generous in their giving. They give voluntarily without having to be prodded, coerced, or even reminded. They give sacrificially. In fact, at times they give beyond what they're able to give or beyond a reasonable amount of giving, beyond what they can normally afford. They give because they want to participate in serving God's people. Richly generous people appreciate the grace that they have received, and they want to extend that grace richly to support those in need and those who serve God. Well, I hope that all of us want to abound in rich generosity. Let's pray as we conclude.